Well, welcome again, everybody. This is Eric Elveson. Today I'm with Andy Wolf, who is the Networks Manager for the Church of England Foundation for Educational Leadership. Before joining the foundation, he worked for 10 years, initially as a middle leader, before being appointed a vice principal, overseeing the development of teaching and learning, coaching, sixth form, Andy, which you're going to have to explain to me later.
Yeah.
And the school's Christian ethos. He's lectured in music, has a wealth of educational experiences, and is committed to combining rich theological reflection with creative approaches to improving teaching, learning, and leadership in schools. So, Andy, thanks for taking some time all the way from England today. Two real quick things about the introduction. What's sixth form? And what is the networks manager?
Okay. Well, hey, first of all, it's great to be with you. Sixth form. So in the British school system, sixth form are the oldest 2 years in high school. So pre going to university or college, as you would call it. So they're the top 2 years. So there'd be students who are aged 16 to 18. And in many schools, those year groups are separate from the rest of the school. So they're kind of embedded in a school, but often in a separate building and that kind of thing. And normally have a slightly more kind of adult feel to them. So that's sixth form. And then in terms of networks, the Church of England Foundation for Education Leadership set up just about 18 months ago. And we run all kinds of activities, including network groups, which bring together probably 10 or 12 schools in a local area to work together on a shared leadership development priority together. So that's how we kind of network people together. And we also run different conferences and online stuff as well, and write various resources to support that.
So, and I think we talked about it last time when we were on the phone, you know, just kind of having that conversation, that it's not a tech network focused. It's the people and the leadership network.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not an IT technician. I don't fix computers or don't run virus protection or anything like that. It's got literally nothing to do with that. It's a people network. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the things that from our prior conversation I wanted to get to eventually is how you've really gotten to the point where you're trying to connect ethos and outcomes. Mm-hmm. I remember that from our prior conversation. But before we jump into what you're doing with the foundation, what you're doing with networks, what you're doing with leadership development, you know, for my North American friends who don't understand the English system, give us a little bit of a scope of the English system, but where the Church of England schools fit within that system.
Okay, yeah, sure. So the Church of England actually is one of the largest providers of education in England. So there are 4,500 Church of England schools in England, which is about 20% of all schools. They're educating about a million children every day, which is, again, quite a significant chunk of English children between the age of 5 and 18. In terms of how that all kind of came about, the Church of England actually was one of the first organizations to provide education in England for free. So there was a guy called Joshua Watson. He founded something called the National Society in 1811. So that's going back just over 200 years. And his vision was to provide education for those that couldn't afford it. So at that point in time, nearly all education was paid for. Plenty of independent private schools that existed then, but they were for the very rich and privileged. And so the Church of England set about essentially a social justice mission, providing education in every community. And because it's a church that the national church has a presence in every community, there are therefore that many schools in existence. They're not all 200 years old, but many of them are quite old, and they'll be located in all kinds of different contexts, but very much at the heart of the community. They're also state schools. So they're not, you know, they're not fee paying schools, or they're not selective or anything like that generally. So it's a really interesting model of the church engaging in the national education system.
And so then when you were a teacher and a leader within this system, how did you get to the place where, you know, or what was the impetus for you to get into this, into the foundational, and to the work of the foundation of kind of developing some of the conversation around ethos and leadership development?
So for about 10 years, I worked at a high school in Nottingham, which is right in the center of England, best known for Robin Hood. In fact, you might like to know that I actually live in a place within Nottingham. It's a suburb of Nottingham called Sherwood. So you might actually, I'm literally sitting in Sherwood right now. You know, it's a pretty small claim to fame. But anyways, the school there, high school, about 1,000 students there, a Church of England school. And I oversaw lots of different aspects of that as a senior leader, including teaching and learning and the sick form the older years, and also the school's ethos and chaplaincy work. And church schools in particular in England spend quite a lot of time working on how they talk about their ethos, or sometimes they'll call it ethos or vision or values or virtues or mission statement or whatever, but anyway, their identity, you know, what they stand for. And they'll also spend a lot of time being under pressure, just like any other school, to improve their students' outcomes. So whether that be academic achievement or attendance or destinations leaving the school, or behavior or exclusions or whatever, schools will be under pressure to improve those. And frequently those two tasks are accidentally separated. So they might spend a lot of time working on their ethos and coming up with a great way of explaining that, even a great prospectus or a film or a whatever that explains that in a really inspiring way. But then when it comes to the day-to-day curriculum design, or deciding whether to exclude somebody, or deciding how to spend their budget or whatever, the connection isn't as strong as it could be. So this approach that we talk about, ethos enhancing outcomes, basically says if your ethos means anything, it should make a difference to your outcomes. And if it doesn't make a difference to your outcomes, it's probably not doing what you think it's doing. And so, yeah, in terms of leadership development, that is a pretty key part of our approach, and one that ensures that the kind of Church of England part of it isn't just the stereotyped sort of religious part of the school, you know, corporate worship or religious studies teaching or whatever, but it actually is saying, you know, that the church, the deeply Christian vision for education should be making a difference to all aspects of school life.
In your documents and in what you're doing, you kind of pull out the three parts of leadership in a Church of England school, with the leader part, the educator part, and a little bit of the theologian part, well, or a significant part of that. Explain how you got to that place, or where you saw the necessity to, you know, say, hey, we need some development in leadership, development in education, development in theology, put them all together, and these are the leaders that we're trying to support, grow, and develop.
I think that approach is trying to see leadership development as holistic. So while it would be quite interesting to have a resource called Thinking Theologically About Education, actually theology doesn't operate in a vacuum. You know, it's a practical, messy business. You know, it can operate in a vacuum, and it can do sometimes, particularly in very academic climates. But actually, for teachers and leaders of schools, they don't really operate like that. And so, in bringing those three strands of coaching together, you know, we're really having a much more holistic conversation that is firstly respectful for people's backgrounds, because people leading these schools are from all kinds of different personal backgrounds. But also it's done in a really empowering way to build confidence as leaders. But I guess the three working together is primarily around seeing that a school leader is obviously a leader. Well, they should be at least, whether, you know, that should be part of what a school leader ought to be, somebody with pedagogy and teaching at their heart. And if they're not, then they might be leading the wrong kind of organization. They perhaps should maybe be leading a business or a hospital or a social work or something different. Because it's easy for education leadership to get kind of a little bit, run away with itself, such that teaching is not at the heart of leadership decisions. And in my experience, where that happens, you know, the impact in the classroom can be quite detrimental. And then in terms of the theology part, there wouldn't probably be many principals of schools, I don't know, in any country probably, who would see themselves as like a theologian. That they might do, but I think it'd be fairly a small number. But actually, this is partly encouraging them to think that they are, because they are actually enacting their view of faith in a community of practice. And that is essentially what a theologian is. What we found with it is it's actually quite an empowering approach that kind of demystifies a bit of thinking theologically about, you know, budgeting or admissions or curriculum design or behavior management. But also it roots it more holistically.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you're working with, so what was, like, when you got into this and when the foundation started to develop this, what did they see as what was missing in leadership development in the Church of England?
Well, I think there's a number of things there why it's kind of come into being. That I think the first is that we recognize that without excellent school leaders, we won't have excellent schools. And in various parts of the country, that is can be a challenge. So in terms of recruitment and in terms of retention, it's a really high pressured job. You know, there are some challenges around that. And I think it's to recognize that leadership is kind of the key challenge in making a sustainable education system. The second thing is that the Church of England, about a similar time to the foundation itself being opened, it published something that's called the Church of England Vision for Education, which subtitle is Deeply Christian Serving the Common Good. And that probably for the first time in a generation really articulated clearly the why of education. And actually for us, that's really important, not least because the more pressure school leaders are under to perform more and produce more and increase productivity more and so on, actually the more that fundamentally their question of calling and vocation comes into play. And actually the working on the question of why we're doing what we're doing is pretty important in terms of motivation, and stands in some contrast to some other narratives that they're working with around in school improvement and productivity and so on. That's not to say what we're doing is not interested in school improvement, because it is, because we are really interested in that. But leadership development is kind of identified as a real key thing for us.
Well, it's amazing that you look at, you know, even here in the States, or, you know, the international, you know, research on school leaders, and your statement on, you know, it's hard to have excellent schools without excellent leaders. Partly because great teaching happens under excellent leaders, and it's allowed to happen. You made a statement, you know, last time we talked too, about, you know, most government publications, you know, they kind of tell you the what, or it's about the what you need to do or what you need to achieve or what needs to happen, whereas your focus has been much more on the why. And you just mentioned it there just briefly. Like, how have you seen that with the leaders that you work with, that as you focus in on the why and as you focus in on those deep, you know, meaningful, this is why I do what I do and get to do what I do. How have you seen that bring life to, you know, leadership and people who maybe, you know, educators tend to be reticent to leadership oftentimes?
Mm-hmm. I mean, a good example of that is that we did some work really recently on the leadership of character education. So I don't know if that terminology translates well into North America or not, but essentially what we mean by that is it is the development of student character alongside their academic achievements. So we'd be interested in like developing the virtues and whether it be courage, humility, joy, faithfulness, perseverance, resilience, whatever. And there's quite a lot of interest in that in England at the moment. Because I think part of the reason for that is that it actually probably goes to the heart of why many teachers actually are teachers. Because they're looking to make a contribution. I mean, sure, they are looking to add value to students and help them pass their exams at the highest grade possible. But most teachers, if you kind of really, you know, really get to the nub of why they do what they do and why they put in such a lot of hours, it's actually looking to make a lasting impact on a future generation. And what can be sometimes the case is that policy documents that are focused on the what of what we're doing frequently will choose really great things to focus on, but frequently will also change quite quickly. These things can change with a change of government or a change of Secretary of State or whatever. Focusing in on that there isn't, it's not really an either or situation, but actually focusing in on the why of leadership actually is pretty motivating. But it's not the kind of woolly sort of, oh, as long as we're all happy with what we're doing and feel, you know, buzz as we walk into the school, then everything will be okay. And let's not worry about whether anyone passes their exams, because actually that would be ridiculous. You know, we're just as interested when we think about like students flourishing, we're just as interested in them excelling in their academic performance as we are in their sporting achievements or their character development or their musicality or whatever it is. And I think if those two things can be drawn together, it's firstly very empowering for leaders to think in that way, but secondly, it does actually make a difference because you are actually you're not reducing the kind of Christian bit of education just to the sidelines, but actually it's having an impact on the main game of leadership in the school, which is not easy to do. But it's trying to give a language that helps people go, oh, okay, yeah, I am actually designing my curriculum for next year. What kind of questions should I be asking? Could I be asking based on the vision?
And one of the things that you've chosen to do in developing and training leaders is to use a network effect of putting together groups of 10 to 15 school leaders, yeah, and work through some of these different questions or some of these different ideas. What are you seeing, about the, I guess it's the 18 months to the year that you've been working on this? What have you been seeing as you work on these networks of leaders throughout the country in a fairly large system?
Yeah. I suppose one thing to say is that we do also run training programs for head teachers, and they're a really key part of our offer to the system. So the networks piece is one element of what we do, But it's a it is a slightly different approach to running a training program. In that you're facilitating a conversation as opposed to, you know, transmitting information, I suppose. And that is quite a different, it's firstly a different skill professionally to do that. Because although I would be quite happy to go and teach a group of school leaders about character education, it's quite a different learning experience for the adults in the room if you're facilitating a conversation around that. It's a much more learner-centered approach. It relies on getting good buy-in and getting good relationships. But it also plays on the fact that, all schools will have their sort of idiosyncrasies. You know, the school that I worked in was different to the one down the road in many significant ways. But in other ways, there's a huge amount to be learned from different contexts, not least on a very basic level. If you're doing something that is new, the chances are it's not new. It might be new to you, but it's probably not new to everyone in the system. And somebody out there will probably have tried something similar that you can learn from. So it's really interesting to facilitate visits to each of the schools and hear the conversations that bubble up that often are, you know, a network kind of bubbles up from the ground up rather than being imposed from the top down. And so it's a bit of a balancing act to kind of catalyze the network with good facilitation, but also then allow it to grow itself, because that's where the most long-lasting impact is being seen.
And that's sometimes the hardest thing, is to foster that and to allow it to cultivate the development of a network, isn't it?
Yeah.
You gotta be patient and see the long-term view, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we've also learned is that, you know, it's got to be the concept of networking. Probably there would be very few school leaders who say, I would prefer to be completely in a bubble. I just don't want to talk to anybody. I've got all the answers. I'm just not interested in having a conversation. But equally, they need to network about something, you know. So it's not a case of just like getting 10 schools in a room and saying, hey, what are you working on? Maybe you could help each other. We're finding that where the more focused it is on a particular leadership development issue, the more common ground that there is. And sometimes that's like a school improvement issue, like improving teaching and learning. Sometimes it's like character education we do. There's some interest in teaming up schools that are in similar contexts. So, you know, we have a lot of schools that are quite small in rural contexts, and they have a different, you know, if your school has, say, under 100 pupils, you know, you're not going to have a very big teaching staff to teach 100 pupils compared to a big high school with 2,000 pupils. It's a different leadership context altogether. So we found that where there's the more focus that there is, the better outcomes really that can be seen.
So let me ask this last question then, you know, because as you build, you know, as you want to see the development of leadership and the development of schools and really I guess the distinctive nature of each school's ethos, you know, how will you as a foundation, or how do you know in your work of developing leaders and working with leaders, how do you know when you've been successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. And evaluating the impact of what we're doing is very central to our work, but it is not straightforward, because we're not simply seeking to say, hey, well, at the start of the network, you're school's attendance was 95%. At the end of this year, it was 95.5%. Therefore, the network had 0.5% impact. It's difficult to like pull out all those different factors. What we actually use is a series of position statements, which we review three times during the year, which relate to perceptions around impact. So how much the school, you know, values the input, how much they can see things beginning to change, what impact it's had on recruitment or retention of staff. And then we measure that every three times in the year. Having started out with each school on their evaluations of the school has to state first up, like what they're hoping to get out of the network and also what they're hoping to put into it as well, because network obviously is not simply self-serving. You've got to join it on the basis that you're giving into it as well in some way. So that's all part of it. And then we're able to capture case studies of what's beginning to happen. And that's been really, really good to see. But any leadership development stuff, it's not quite as, like the causal relationship is not straightforward to black and white track. But changes in perception and changes in confidence as leaders, particularly around these issues of the why of what we're doing, are quite positive to track, actually.
Okay, let me ask one last question then. And this will be the final one. Having done this now, what's one thing you wish you would have known when you were a school leader that you know now?
I think there's so many things. I think one thing that is that's definitely true for me is that you don't realize when you're inside an institution how much you could learn from other people's contexts. And now that I'm working across hundreds of schools, I've got a different viewpoint, I suppose, but consequently, I really enjoy connecting people together. So I really enjoy noticing something in one school and saying, hey, I know somebody in a different part of the country who's dealt with that already. Here's their email. Why don't you connect with them? And I think there can be a tendency as a school leader to think that your school is it's the only place that's dealing with that. You know, you'd never understand because you're not in my school, you know, when actually the similarities are probably greater than the unique idiosyncrasies, I suppose. And I think that's probably true internationally as well. Although at first you might think, gosh, well, that's a totally different system. You know, even that the Church of England is an established part of the state in England, which is obviously totally different to the American Constitution and all the rest of it. One might think, oh, well, it's such a different system. What could we learn from one another? But actually, I imagine the overlap is actually much greater than the difference. So I think I would have wanted to have realized that rather than being in my own little bubble, thinking that either all my problems were unique or all my successes were unique.
My favorite is yesterday I had the conversation with somebody who is like, I have a new idea. And he told me his new idea. And I'm like, hey, wait, I know a guy who did that 20 years ago.
Right.
And he's like, dang.
Yeah. But,
Andy, I really appreciate this. Thank you so much. And look forward to connecting in the future.
Definitely. That's great.